It's the Ray Appleton Podcast from KMJ and KMJNow.com.
It's hour two of the Ray Appleton Show. CG here with you. Let's reset your scorecards. Michael Martinez driving the ship here, your producer. He does everything in this place. I'm just telling you, he does absolutely everything. Liz Kern, the news desk, Chicagoan, Trojan, fight on. There you go. Cast of thousands in this building. Dr. Bill Maurice has been coming on with me for almost 3 years now. He is an amazing man. He's remarkable information. He's the president of Mayo Clinic Labs. He is the chair of lab medicine and pathology. He served working or helping President Trump. He did the same thing. He's doing the same thing now for President Biden. When Vice President Pence came to Mayo Clinic, Dr. Maurice was one of the people showing him around. We have the great pleasure of Dr. Maurice joining us right now. What do you say, my friend? We have folks in the Midwest known you as Big Knocker.
Yeah, well, I guess it's funny. I was at a friend's retirement party yesterday, and I ordered a beer, and the bartender said, well, now I know what the Big Knocker drinks. I thought, well, I guess I've made a name for myself, for better or worse.
I know you came off a phone call with the White House about monkeypox. We're going to talk about that in a second, but I do want to ask you, I mean, I've known you for a long time. What is it like when you are in the presence of the president, either by phone or in person?
Well, it's, you know, so far I've not been with the big, just with the Veeps and now the task force people. It's a little surreal, but at the same point in time, it's I don't know, they're just people. So
yeah.
it's more than anything. It's there. You realize just how controlled all of their, and it's irrespective of administration, how controlled their environment is in terms of how you can interact with them, with Secret Service. And when they were here, going back with Pence, I mean, there was, we met with him near the loading dock for the labs, and they had the limo parked there in the loading dock. And that's where I would bring my bike. When I ride my bike to work, I come in through that loading dock, which doesn't have all the bunting and presidential stuff around, and also didn't have all the Secret Service people. So, yeah, I mean, that's probably the biggest thing, is it's just like, wow, you just don't appreciate it unless you're actually there, just how managed really the whole situation is.
I'm just imagining you, if it was your day off, you know, riding your bike over to Mayo, you got your Minnesota Wild jersey on, and the Secret Service is like, who is this guy? Who is this guy coming at us?
Yeah, exactly. No. In fact, they even had a control. It was the one time we could only use one bathroom. It was a woman's bathroom. So I was like, I've been in this place for 30 years. There's one place I hadn't been that I had to go.
Oh, boy.
Escorted by the Secret Service.
All right. We're talking with Dr. Bill Maurice, president of Mayo Clinic Labs. Let's take this a little more serious here now, to a serious level. You were on a call with the White House today about monkeypox. What are their concerns? What are your concerns? What are the cases revealing to you and the medical community? I've read that monkeypox, you've told me, isn't something that, generally speaking, most of us in everyday life shouldn't be concerned about. Is that still true?
Well, yes and no, I guess, is the bottom, which just seems like a very noncommittal answer. So I better expand a little bit. So first of all, again, monkeypox is something that has been infecting humans for centuries. And in fact, even though it's called monkeypox, it turns out monkeys probably aren't the primary host either. It's in Africa, Central Africa, and it's probably rodents that are the primary host. And you have to remember that COVID and coronaviruses are a bit different in terms of how they can go from one species to another and adapt. Many viruses don't do that very effectively, including orthopox virus, which is what causes monkeypox. So we've had outbreaks for centuries. The thing that's a little different about this one is two things. Number one, there seems to be much more human-to-human transmission than we have seen in the past, meaning that typically if there are outbreaks, there'd be maybe 20 or 30 people that would get it. It would get contained quickly and would go away. Some of the outbreaks in Europe have been pretty substantial. In the U.S., I think we're at 300 cases or so right now. And the other thing that's concerning about this one is typically It's the way that monkeypox illness is clinically is that a person feels really sick, they get better, and then they get a rash over their entire body, which is pustules, like when you think of smallpox. It's a pox virus. So it causes pustules as a diffuse rash. This most recent outbreak has been different in that it's patients, many of them have not felt sick before they get the rash, and the rash has been more localized to the anogenital region, and it's been in outbreaks in men who have sex with men, so it's been behaving more like a sexually transmitted infection. So the concern is, from the White House, is really twofold. Number one is that patients aren't being recognized and diagnosed because doctors aren't thinking of it, because it's not a common disease to begin with, and it's presenting atypically. And the other is concern that if we don't get on top of it, is it could actually become endemic, meaning that it just starts to circulate in the population.
So, all right, so you hit the key word. Potentially, we're talking with Dr. Bill Maurice, president of Mayo Clinic Labs, the chair of lab medicine and pathology out in the great facility in Rochester, Minnesota. You said endemic. All right, let's shift a little bit, if we may, to COVID. I've asked you this many times. It's been a while. Are we still in a pandemic? And if we are, who makes the determination that it is no longer a pandemic? And I'm going to ask you a third question in here. If there is a surge after we're out of a pandemic, do we go back in one again?
Yeah, those are all great questions that I don't know that are, there's no by the book about when you make the declaration of a pandemic to endemic. You know, I think the fact that typically with an endemic for a respiratory virus is when you would see seasonal increases in cases, right? And it doesn't even mean endemics can be very dangerous. For those people like that have to travel to different parts of the world where you have to get vaccinated before you travel, like for yellow fever or dengue, that's because you're going to an area of the world where those diseases are endemic, and they can be quite debilitating, right? So endemic doesn't necessarily equate with low severity of disease, although with COVID, it seems to be going that direction. But, you know, so typically you want to see more seasonality. The fact that we still have pretty high sustained positivity rates, upwards of 10% in some parts of the country, means we're probably still in the pandemic phase, but it's not the same as it was, you know, 2 years ago, thankfully, because even though the positivity rate's pretty high, the number of patients actually getting hospitalized continues to drop. So we're moving out of it, but I don't know it's going to be like we're going to be able to just declare victory one day.
Right.
I don't think it's going to end like that.
So we're moving ever so gently out of that, but the variants, there's multiple variants, not just Omicron, and before there was Delta, B, all these ones. I may be venturing into waters that I'm going to drown, and you'll save me, so bear with me. Are vaccines going to start becoming variant specific? And if they do, Dr. Maurice, is it going to suddenly be like cough syrups and cold medicines, where we've got a dozen different vaccines from Moderna and Pfizer and so on, where they're variant specific, and we are left as consumers wondering, well, which road do I go down now?
Well, I was a lifeguard in college, so I guess I am qualified. I was wondering, am I qualified? You know, and to answer to your first question, that was the news, I guess, almost a month ago now, where Moderna, I believe it is, has a variant, an Omicron-specific bivalent vaccine, meaning it has part of the vaccine is the vaccine to the original strain of COVID, and part of the vaccine is actually against the Omicron strain. And there was a lot of excitement because the early data indicated that people that got that booster, if you will, had much higher levels of neutralizing antibodies against Omicron. And so the hope is that it'll be more specific and last longer. So the question, of course, is that Omicron, if you recall, was much different than the prior strains that were out there. So we still don't know for sure if this is going to be, you know, if there's another strain out there which is much different than Omicron, then that I'll bet they're off again, if you will. But the chances are we're going to have a more, by the fall, we'll have a more of a variant-specific vaccine, which will be more effective. I think over time, as we move out of, and this will be because there's moving out of the pandemic, but then there's also moving out of the public health emergency, and which is a much different thing, right? That's a public health emergency that's declared by the federal government. As soon as that public health emergency expires, all the vaccines that have EUA will have to get full FDA approval before they can be used in humans. Same for the tests. And so I think once we get out of the public health emergency, you're not going to get into the drugstore phenomenon where you have to go and pick your flavor of COVID vaccine. There'll probably just be one or two, just like it is with influenza.
All right. That's a great answer. All right. We have Dr. Bill Maurice with us. We're going to have one more segment with Dr. Maurice. He is, of course, the president of Mayo Clinic Labs, the chair of lab medicine and pathology. One of the things I want to hit on with him immediately when we return from the pause is a disturbing report from Becker's Hospital Review, and it centers on Americans are now deferring or moving past worrying about health care and prescriptions because they don't have the money. And that fits right in with what we talked about on hour one. So glad you're joining us. It's the Ray Appleton Show. Christopher Gabriel sitting in here on News Talk 580 1059 KMJ.
The Ray Appleton Podcast.
It's free.
KMJNow.com.
Good afternoon, Appleton Nation. Glad to have you aboard. CG sitting in for Ray. Glad to have you listening to Dr. Bill Maurice, president of Mayo Clinic Labs, chair of lab medicine and pathology. Thank you, doctor, for hanging out with us. Becker's Hospital Review. That was once something I'd never heard of. Now, through you, this is an industry gold standard of sorts. And one of their reports that I saw, I'm going to quote directly from Molly Gamble. And Molly says this. I just find this really disturbing and disheartening. Quote, Americans aged 50 and older are feeling the pressure of healthcare costs, with 4 in 10 concerned about their ability to pay for care and others foregoing treatment altogether, skipping prescriptions or cutting back on daily living expenses to afford healthcare. The findings, this is still Molly talking, the findings come from a survey of 6,663 U.S. adults conducted by West Health and Gallup in September and October 2021, close quote. Obviously, Dr. Maurice, a lot of this is the byproduct of inflation. I talked in hour one about everything that we're getting attacked by relative to costs of gas, electric, food, you name it. But this is the United States. And to learn that individuals, our fellow citizens, are foregoing care and prescriptions, this is totally out of whack. How does something like this get solved, at least from the medical side of things?
Well, it's really distressing. I mean, just to be clear, I couldn't agree more. And it's there's a lot of different factors at play here in terms of the role of medicine in helping to address some of this. I think number one, it's around kind of just educating the public and letting people know if people have really foregone healthcare and even just screening for the last 3 years. And, you know, screening is so important to catch something early helps not only, number one, you as an individual avoid a lot of the burden of a health condition. It also helps, it's more cost effective. I think other things we have to look at, there's the stuff that Mark Cuban's been working on in terms of generic pharmacy and how do we lower the cost of drugs. There's the, things that we can do from a policy perspective. Virtual care, I think, is going to become more and more the norm where, because if you think about it, gas prices, there was another story, I think also by Molly Gamble, just talking about how some people, if they have to drive for a couple hours or an hour and a half, it's costing them, $80 each way to drive to get health care if they have a condition they have to get seen for. And that church there in the Central Valley, certainly here, that's part of it. So virtual care, how much can we do if someone doesn't have to leave their home and also doesn't have to leave work or get daycare for their kids? I think it's going to really push us to make healthcare much more accessible and convenient for people.
Yeah.
Because it can't be as a luxury.
Yeah, you mentioned about driving, and it's interesting because it reminded me of when I was in Fargo at a station there for 6 years. And there were two giant fundraisers every year. One was called Bras on Broadway, and it was for breast cancer. And the other was Bros on Broadway, and that was for prostate cancer. And, I mean, they raised – I had the pleasure of emceeing those events a number of times. But the point of those events was they raised hundreds of thousands of dollars, and they all went to the same thing, Dr. Maurice, gas cards. they went to gas cards for people coming to Fargo from hundreds of miles away to have cancer treatments for either breast cancer or for prostate cancer, just trying to take the burden of that off. And now, certainly here in California, where gas prices are insane, the burden has increased. Dr. Bill Maurice joining me from Mayo Clinic. You are the co-author. We have you till the bottom of the hour, so I'm trying to hit a couple of different things here because you have such varied knowledge. It's just great. You're like the Oracle at Rochester. you're the co-author, one of the co-authors of the upcoming fifth edition of the World Health Organization Classification of Hematologic Cancers. And I mean, the name itself just is somewhat self-explanatory, but it's also very confusing. So what is going to be in this that everyday non-medical folks like me and many listeners should understand about this?
Well, I think the most important thing is that, you know, when someone says they have cancer, and like when I was growing up before I got into medicine, I thought of cancer as a disease, right? We talk about the cure for cancer. Well, the reality is that cancer is literally hundreds of different diseases, if not thousands of different diseases, right? And just like you talked about, there's, you know, the bros and the bras. Well, that's a pretty broad categorization, but the reality is that the more that we work and use science to understand these different cancers, the better chance we have of actually curing them, because they become, what's happening is that as we get better at recognizing different kind of cancers as a discrete type, and for me, I'm a expert in the cancer of blood cells. And so we're determining all these different kinds of cancers that weren't recognized. Why is that important? Well, number one, if you suffer from one of these, we can give you much more specific information about what you have. And then ideally, what we could do is actually design treatments that are much more specific, because you can't really treat something unless you know what it is precisely. If you don't have a precise diagnosis, you don't have a precise treatment. And so that's why testing is so important. But then also for complex diseases like cancer, continuing to study what the actual disease is. So when you're testing, you can give a person a real specific answer and then give them a real specific treatment or timeline if it's not a treatable disease in terms of how their disease is going to. Because that's, you know, if someone says, you know, a doctor says you have cancer, you know, that's the outline is how long do I got? And it's, again, it's really about answering people's questions. And it's unfortunately, cancer continues to go up in incidence. So the more we understand it, the more precise we are in diagnosing it, the better we'll be able to treat patients.
That's a great answer. That really does explain that much better than I could have imagined. See if we can sneak two more quick things in here. I want to jump back to COVID for a second. Are we going to get to a point that it does become, in fact, an annual or semi-annual thing where we need vaccines and boosters? I mean, with COVID, is there a possibility that with enough people vaccinated, that largely becomes herd immunity and the risk starts to become minimal?
Well, you know, that's one thing that, actually, herd immunity has really gone out of the parlance, in public health discussion. And that's because we're not going to achieve herd immunity. Herd immunity for an infectious pathogen means that enough people are immune to it that they can't pass it. Mm. And therefore, people who aren't immune won't get infected. And we know that's not going to happen with COVID. Now, I suspect that the people that are getting reinfected are getting, some are getting really sick, as sick as you get with influenza, which to me suggests that probably at some point we're going to be on an annual vaccination cycle, because it'll be more akin to influenza type illness that we're trying to protect people from.
And so the question I've asked you to end a conversation with you repeatedly for the last 2.5+ years, what is Dr. Bill Maurice's biggest concern right now?
My biggest concern right now is that really is really watching to the fall, because in the fall there'll be more transmission, and my concern is that people will be sort of complacent, thinking, well, now COVID is not an illness that's going to make me very sick. I won't worry about getting another vaccine or getting a booster, particularly if there's a more effective one. And there's still the looming possibility that we could have a more virulent strain appear. So I think that my biggest fear right now is complacency. I hope in the fall that cases continue to be low. But we just have to, this fall is going to be really important, I think, kind of at that threshold, is the pandemic over. So my fear is that people will just be complacent and assume that it is.
You know, I've assiduously avoided bringing up baseball because, as is usually the case, the White Sox, they're not eliminated yet, but come July 1st, I'm in countdown mode for college football, but at least you have a fun summer ahead with the Minnesota Twins.
Yeah, they've been playing well. You know, it's unfortunate that the starter they traded for from the Padres went down with needing Tommy John surgery again.
Yeah.
So they've been bitten by injury, but they're a fun team to watch at a minimum. So if they just had a closer, that'll be the real key here.
Yeah, well, I envy you. It must be nice to root for a baseball team that does something. Bring on the fall. He is Dr. Bill Maurice, the president of Mayo Clinic Labs, the chair of lab medicine and pathology, diehard Twins, Wolves, Vikings, Wild fan. Doctor, it's always a great pleasure. We always learn just a little bit more or a lot more when you join us, and I appreciate you taking time out of what I know is a busy day to hang out with us here in the Central Valley.
Well, it's always a pleasure. I really enjoy talking with you, and I'm happy to come on anytime.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. Dr. Bill Maurice joining us. All right, coming up next, right after Liz Kern's news, we're going to talk. I'm going to call this the college nickname roulette wheel of shame. That is next.
The Ray Appleton Podcast, right now.
Be free.
KMJNow.com.
Good to be with you halfway through Mr. Appleton's program today. 490-5858, 800-776-5858. Is it hot enough for you outside? I know that I whine about that a lot, and I make no apologies for it because I just, Christina Lopez earlier from our news partner, KMPH, you know, saying that it's going to be, 107 degrees. She says it so nicely. Like, isn't it great that we can all enjoy 107? And I've said this so many times before, and Ray and I have talked about this, where all of you folks who are from here, you know, listen, I've lived here almost 8 years. Fresno is great. So many wonderful things about this area. And, I mean, it's just, you know, it took me a while to get used to the weather, number one. But, I mean, the weather from, like, November to April, where it's really beautiful. But the people that always say, well, it's a dry heat. Okay, do you grow up learning that? Is that sort of beaten into you that you learn as just tell folks it's a dry heat. Tell them that and they'll be fine. It's like somebody from Chicago, like me or Liz Kern, saying, I'm telling you, 93% humidity, you don't feel a thing. It's fine. Even though you're walking around like a boiled egg noodle. So it's a big ruse, all right? It's a big ruse. I was in North Dakota when the University of North Dakota had their giant nickname kerfuffle. And kerfuffle might not be the right word for it because it was just a nightmarish situation that the state dealt with regarding the University of North Dakota fighting Sioux. Now, it was complicated with the NCAA. As far as I'm concerned, and you've heard me doing sports talk for years, you've heard me on the weekends, the NCAA, when you talk about corrupt organizations or organizations that are wildly dysfunctional, put them right there with FIFA and the International Olympic Committee. They're all just as backwards. Clean out the folks in Indianapolis and start again. That's what they need to do. And the inconsistency with Native American nicknames makes me crazy. My position has never changed. All in or all out. Don't tell me that it's okay for Seminoles to be there. And oh, by the way, a $50 million check from Florida State to Seminole Nation in Oklahoma and Florida. Seminole stays there. Chippewas for Central Michigan stays there. The Bradley Braves in Peoria, Illinois, they were allowed to keep Braves provided they didn't use any kind of Native American logos, you know, headdresses and so on. The University of Utah, the Utes. But the North Dakota Fighting Sioux, there was a primary stipulation, and this is leading to George Washington University. So stay with me. Stay with me here. University of North Dakota, there's two main tribes up there, Spirit Lake and Standing Rock. And all you need to know is that what the NCAA said, and this is paring it down to its simplest form, the membership in both tribes needed to vote in favor of keeping the nickname. One of the tribes, and I believe it was Spirit Lake, voted almost 5-1 to keep the name. These are Native Americans. I interviewed tons of the good folks there. Now, with the other tribe, with the other area, their straw vote was almost 5-1 as well. But their executive director stood in the way, didn't allow the vote to go through, and ultimately they lost their nickname. The state of North Dakota sent the governor, one of the United States senators, University of North Dakota athletic director, the president, and they couldn't get him to relent. Bear in mind, state police cars in the state of North Dakota have the Sioux headdress on the sides of their cars. State routes in North Dakota have the same headdress. The logo there for the school was drawn a dignified, very striking, powerful profile of a member of Sioux Nation. It was drawn by, a member of Sioux Nation. So with that backdrop, apparently my voice is changing. I'll work through it. I bring you to George Washington University. George Washington University out in Maryland. I have some friends that graduated there. Their nickname, since they've had nicknames, is the Colonials. And George Washington is going to retire Colonials. Because according to university officials, the use of the moniker can, quote, no longer serve its purpose as a name that unifies. So you have not just the nickname, but you have a number of buildings being renamed and what have you. The individuals, the university's interim president several months ago, Mark S. Wrighton, he said this, and I'm quoting, "I was impressed by the principled and collaborative approach of the special committee. And it was clear this process was driven by research and robust engagement with the community. While some may disagree with the outcome," that would be an understatement, "this process has determined that changing the moniker is the right decision for our university," close quote. All right, a couple of thoughts about this. One of the concerns has been American colonialism and that they don't want to be associated with that. What's the term? Here's the definition straight from Webster's. Domination of a people or area by a foreign state or nation. The practice of extending and maintaining a nation's political and economic control over another people or area. While the word colonialism is sometimes considered to encompass non-state forms of influence and domination, in general use, it is more typically understood as an extension of state power. All right. I think all of us more or less understand what colonialism is and the shortened version of that, colonials. Please help me out here, Appleton Nation. Please, I'm genuinely asking you this. What am I missing here? I am clearly missing something on how the name Colonials is offensive. And I've said to you, I mean, all in or all out. And you can make an argument that, well, CG, hold on, if you want to have them all in, are you okay with Redskins? Well, that's obviously, I think that's a pretty obvious exception. But then you start, I'm somebody who, I don't necessarily believe that lines should be blurred. I think there are lines in different areas that should be there. If we blur too many lines, then we have nothing to stand on anymore. And it could be whatever we're talking about. But when I see a university community like George Washington, this is a Division I school in basketball and all sports. They don't have a football program there. But when I see them saying, this is an offensive nickname. We no longer want to be associated with this heinous name, the Colonials. I'm just finding myself wondering, what is the problem here? I would love for one of you to tell me, or more than one of you, to tell me what I'm missing. Or have we just gone completely off the deep end? 490-5858, outside the area, 800-776-5858. Please tell me, where are you at with the nickname roulette wheel of shame? Have we completely lost our minds with this stuff? I mean, what's next? Buffaloes? Ducks? Bulldogs? I'm not being facetious. I need to know from you, is Colonial an offensive name that needs to go? 490-5858. Ray Appleton Show. CG in for him.
Right now.
The Valley's legendary Ray Appleton.
The Ray Appleton Podcast. KMJNow.com.
490-5858. I sometimes think people are a little bit nicknamed out. We've been pounded down by this. You know, certainly nicknames in the state of California have gone away. Miami of Ohio changed their nickname. St. John's University changed theirs. And, of course, I mentioned University of North Dakota. But those are all Native American nicknames. Email saying this, I don't see anything wrong with colonials. I consider it a reference to the colonists and the 13 original colonies of the U.S. and their leader, George Washington. To me, the name has never had anything to do with colonialism. We're going overboard with all this name changing. Face it, you can't please all of the people all the time. People are too easily offended these days, and being politically correct is being carried to extremes. Would they have every person in the U.S. whose last name is Lee change it because it's the same as Robert E. Lee, who led the Confederate Army? Jim, thank you for the email. It's a good point that he's making, but I think that we are a nation of excess when it comes to this area. And I do think there's an element of everybody's trying to please everybody. You know, this person's offended about this. This person's offended by that. Most of you know that before I came to radio years ago, I was a classically trained actor. And I remember doing a production of Mice and Men. And Of Mice and Men has the N-word in it. And there is an African-American character in the play and in the book named Crooks. And the actor who played it was from Mississippi, named Danny Robinson Clark. And you have the table read when you get to when you do a play. The very first thing you do is a table read. And he stood up before anybody spoke and said, I want to make one thing very clear. This word, because I know we're going to be discussing this tonight, this word cannot be taken out of this play. I grew up in Mississippi when this word was prominent. This is Danny talking. And it is part of our history, and it needs to be dealt with by people. It's uncomfortable, but it needs to be dealt with. And I'm with him. That's a part of our history that we need to keep. I don't like books being whitewashed, sanitized. I don't like that. If you don't want to read a book, don't read a book. But don't take it off a library shelf. And when it comes to nickname cleansing, if we can call it that, we are in a situation now where I know up in North Dakota, there were certainly people that did that wanted the name to go away, but they were vastly outnumbered. In Florida, it was overwhelming to keep the name, like it was in North Dakota. But I think that the NCAA played favorites. And if you went back and looked at that, you would see that the NCAA played favorites. And North Dakota doesn't have near University of North Dakota in Grand Forks, North Dakota doesn't have nearly the equity, the panache that Florida State has. The NCAA wasn't going to win any kind of battle legally or in the court of public opinion with Florida State, with the Seminoles. It wasn't happening. With little old North Dakota, yeah. But then you look at what happened with Central Michigan. How did they pull that off? So George Washington, as I look at this, I'm just wondering, because I have, as I said, I have friends who went there, and I have friends in that media, friends in that community. So I asked them. I asked just over a half dozen of them. A simple email. What's your read on this? And they each told me a version of not really sure who the university has spoken to about this, where they are saying there is widespread acceptance of getting rid of this name. But to each one of those men and women that I spoke to, they said that's not the read they're getting. That's not what they're hearing. So I don't really understand where this is going to end. Future teams, expansion teams in any of the four professional leagues, they're not going to go with names like this. And obviously Washington got rid of Redskins, Washington football team, and now they're the Commanders. Or Commandos. I think they're Commanders. Yeah, I think the commander in chief. And of course, now you now in social media and occasionally here and there, you have people shortening commanders because they don't like Dan Snyder, the owner. You have some referring to the Washington football team with the command as the commies. Now, I don't know. There's really nothing that you can, you know, combine with commies and everything, but it's just kind of ironic. But I think to kind of put a button on this, when I see what George Washington University is doing with this nickname, this to me is completely off the charts. It's out of whack. It's out of control. I don't see, and perhaps I'm missing something. Maybe somebody will email me or throw a voicemail my way and just say, here's where you've missed the boat on this, Christopher. Here is where you are totally out in left field. When I saw this article, at first I thought it was from The Onion. And then I started looking it up and, again, sending that little email blast out to about a half dozen people. I just thought, this can't be serious. It is serious. University is absolutely serious. They want to have a change by the 2023-24 school year. They want to rename buildings. They want their health center, where all their students go for health care, the Colonial Health Center. We want to get rid of that. For meals and laundry services there, you get what's called Colonial Cash. They want to get rid of that term. They want to get rid of all the machines that say that. Get rid of all of it. Because Colonials is such an offensive term. I don't get it. I'm either out of touch or something really has flown right by me. All right. We are already coming up on hour number three. Of course, Liz has your news at the top of the hour. Liz Kern. Terry Sladek is going to be in, and we have a lot to talk about. We are going to talk a little bit about what's going on at Bullard High School next year. The United States Army. We're talking about military branches and what they're doing to recruit. There's just any number of things. We're going to talk about his football background, too, and relate that to young people today and sports. Lots to get to with Terry Sladek. It's the Ray Appleton Show. I'm Christopher Gabriel. Glad to have you aboard. Don't you go anywhere.
It's the Ray Appleton Podcast from KMJ and KMJNow.com.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draftaccess to register for free entry today.